2397-2398, Cuyahoga County Child Support Enforcement Agency versus Denver Guthrie. Mr. Spatman.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Tim Spatman. This is the Cuyahoga County Prosecuting Attorney. I'm here on behalf of the appellate, Cuyahoga Support Enforcement Agency. As an assistant county prosecutor, part of my duties are to establish paternity, establish child support orders. In addition, part of my duties are to protect judgments that we obtain against collateral taxes, motions for relief from judgments. And if I may beg your indulgence for a moment, so the court gets a good idea of what happens in these cases. In Cuyahoga County, on any given day, 110 to 160 child support cases could be docketed. Among each day, there are typically a number of motions to vacate based on various different reasons, either less under any of the problems under Civil Rule 60B. Typically, most of the cases come back in a situation where there's a non-exclusive on genetic test, and that motion is withdrawn, the majority of those motions. Some of the motions end up in exclusions. They are, again, resolved by agreement. Typically, at some point, a mother realizes the father's excluded will name someone else in cases dismissed at that point. In this case being different, unique, Ms. Taylor is fully adamant and consistent that there's no one else in the plan other than Denver Guthrie, who's the founder of Jason Taylor.
So you're seeing a number of these cases come to you under 60B motions?
Many, Your Honor.
Does 60B fit?
I'm not sure that 60B is actually the correct rule to use, Your Honor. However, when you draw a balance between what is res judicata and final and what's open-ended as far as litigating goes, I think at some point you have to draw a time limit. For example, even by analogy, statutes of limitation, medical malpractice case, you have 1 year, personal injury case, you have 2 years. At some point, the litigation has to stop, particularly in cases involving children, child support, visitation. I'll point this court to the judicial policy laid out in the Gilbert decision that said judgment of paternity should be shielded from the unsettling effects of further judicial inquiry.
And here it's your argument 60B2 is the proper vehicle as opposed to 60B4.
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor.
But is 60B2 even the proper vehicle to set aside? Can you use 60B to change child custody? Can you use 60B to change? Can you use 60B to change child support?
Your Honor, I
see the problem.
I see the problem directly. The difficulty is, at some point, the litigation has to stop. Civil rules specifically apply to paternity acts. Paternity acts is a special statutory proceeding, so therefore they apply and it's clearly applicable.
But arguing 60B2, you are conceding that 60B can be used to set aside these determinations if done with a proper defense within a year. You're conceding
Correct.
That for all time.
I will concede that because the reason being is it's consistent with the statutory scheme that exists today.
Okay.
The legislature has enacted comprehensive legislation in the area of paternity. As this court will recall, your decision in Marker versus Grimm in dealing with the child support statute recognized that the legislature was dealing with a problem, that we were trying to comply with Title 4D of the Social Security Act, make child support orders equitable, and therefore, since you specifically stated that the courts ought to strictly adhere to what those statutes say. And paternity actions, which were also created to comply with the mandates of Title 4 of the Social Security Act. There's different time limits, Your Honor. For example, if administrative determination of paternity, if not objected to within 30 days, is a full and final enforceable order of paternity. So therefore, you have a 30-day limit if you happen to be going through the administrative process. Those, there's two cases, the Tasman case, the Kenneth J case, that are both held that to be res judicata. You have the new 5101.314 statute, which creates the affidavit, the establishment of attorney by affidavit of the Central Birth Registry. It has a limit of 60 days, and it's final. However, a party can come back into court within a year, and under the grounds of fraud, duress, and material mistake effect.
But that's a new statute that would seem to take account of the fact that we do now have DNA evidence. This situation is one where Mr. Guthrie did not have DNA evidence until sometime after his paternity was determined, and the DNA evidence comes back saying 0% chance that he's the father. Let's assume, for argument, sake of argument, that 60B is appropriate here. Why isn't 60B4 an appropriate remedy for someone in Mr. Guthrie's position? He says, I have DNA evidence now that says I cannot be the father of this child. I've been determined to be that, and so the order of the court should no longer have prospective application. Why shouldn't the justice system take his case on review under 60B4 and ask the question, determine the question, whether he should continue to be the father?
Your Honor, DNA result is evidence. You have a specific problem with 60B2, the state newly discovered evidence.
That's what why I'm surprised you're conceding that 60B2 would apply. In some of these cases that we've had, DNA was not as developed as it is today. And we're not writing this case just for past cases, but for future cases. And I would think that every putative father is aware that he can very easily disprove paternity with the DNA testing. So for me, I don't see that DNA testing any longer would fall under newly discovered evidence, because at the time of proceedings, you're going to be aware of DNA testing. I think I have the same concern as the Chief Justice that it is a bit inequitable when we learn through DNA testing that this particular person is not the father, and why shouldn't we be able to use that 60B4 to end the support of someone who is not the father of the child.
Your Honor, if I may approach that this way, that in attorney cases, particularly in juvenile court obtains its jurisdiction to hear attorney cases under 2151 of the revised code, which states that the juvenile court, in using that jurisdiction, is concerned with the best interest of the child. There's a whole lot more people, a whole lot, there's the mother involved, the child involved, the state involved, there's a whole lot of other rights to consider than just Mr. Guthrie's rights. Mr. Guthrie had 3 to 4 opportunities during the pendency of this case to obtain a genetic test, didn't comply with the civil rule. 17 or 14 months down the line, he requested genetic test. Unfortunately, it's not even typical of a way paternity action proceeds. At some point in time, either somebody's going to appear for a genetic test or they're not going to appear for a genetic test.
Well, as you know, counsel, from the recent case we received from the 8th District and Judge Porter, the reasonable time that court then distinguished this case, the Guthrie case, by saying that in Guthrie, this putative father did, he did act within a reasonable time. Essentially, the court said, yeah, he let the judgment go on, but he soon, as soon as they started coming after him for the cash, he got very interested. Right. So, but the, I guess the, you, we're still, you're making an argument here about reasonable time, and that's how this court, this later case, was decided on reasonable, not using before, 60B4 instead of 60B3, which we're really needing to debate here, aren't we, whether or not we are limited to the 1 year under 3?
I agree, Your Honor. 60B requires each of the three GTE prongs be met if you're going to seek relief pursuant to 60B. The Holman case, the 8th District went back to following the strike decision in 60B2, saying even if we did decide it under 60B4, 7.5 years would be too long. That's the problem with using 60B4. We've got courts, some say 16 is not long enough, some say 2 is too long. There's no consistency in that scenario, and when you're dealing with children, at some point in time you certainly need that finality for their stability, well-being. I've seen children traumatized and end up in the hospital because they were running for genetic tests and ended up in exclusion.
The problem I have, I guess, in this case is the reasonable time issue without a good excuse. I mean, it sounded like from reading the brief from that, that this guy just took his chances. Maybe he thought he was the father, but he didn't want to get the test. He basically ignored the hearing and let the order go on. When you come in on a civil motion, on a civil case for 60B, you have to show a good reason why you didn't get in there and defend yourself in the first place. And I don't even think you need
that. That is correct, Your Honor. This case is much more like the Arp case, the Loman case, or the Caruso case, the Rosen case. He didn't file an answer. The court didn't default him. They gave him another notice, gave him another chance, and set the case for trial. The civil rules apply to these actions. You abide by them or walk that rope, so to speak, into peril. If he chose to deliberately make deliberate choices not to litigate this matter, the question is, ought he be able to benefit? Now, in addition, a big problem with this case is the court dismissed it sui sponte without any notice or opportunity to be heard by any of the parties. It was the state's contention that there may be some reliability problems with that particular DNA test in this case. It is not an uncommon scenario, and unfortunately it's occurring with more of a consistent regularity for people to send in what we refer to as ringers, people in their stead. Those cases are very difficult then to approach without having a hearing. To determine the evidence, to determine whether or not the right person showed up for genetic testing, to determine...
Counsel, the status is this case that's right now. Are there any consequences to Mr. Godfrey for waiting? Does he have any obligations to pay?
As the case currently stands right now, no, Your Honor.
None.
That is correct.
We're looking at the equity. Yeah, maybe the equity seem like we should stick to this man, assuming that the ringer is not there and all those issues, which apparently weren't hearing. But are there equities that now this child thinks that he has a father or she has a father, and for 14 months that child thinks that, and then this guy all of a sudden decides he don't want to pay child support, wakes up and smells gross and gets off his duck.
Your Honor, believe it or not, we have cases where individuals were excluded that they insisted on acknowledging and then still remaining as a father. I think in every scenario, again, we refer to the statute of limitations problem. You run outside the statute, it's a harsh remedy, even though you have a valid claim. If you choose to litigate and not use the civil rules, if you litigate it carefully, had this been a contract case, and you didn't file your answer and you were defaulted again, I don't see any way in the world 15 months later you could come back in and say, well, you know, I wasn't here, and I didn't have like this done, and...
Counsel, is there any way for us to get this in a posture where this person or anybody else who sleeps on his rights gets stung for the child support after the point that do wake up, and maybe even for attorney fees, the county, those kind of things. So there is some punishment, but it doesn't go on in perpetuity.
I guess...
Well, how do we do that?
Well, I tend to think, Your Honor, I'm not sure, and I guess I'm going to refer back to Justice Herbert Brown in the Mueller case, which was cited by the court when he was concerned with paternity statutes and that they didn't lay out what's called the elements of the father, but the least of which were concerned necessarily actual genetics. I think in some cases where an individual interjects themselves, and that's the most of the cases are you have admissions and then the relationship falls apart years later, but yet this...
Well, do we need a special rule for this? I mean, this is the right remedy here to modify the rules, to have a special rule apply to this case. That's the answer that we should do.
I'm not sure that it is, because I think where the court would need to err in that scenario is to err on the side of caution and err on the side of the child, because the child didn't create the situation. I think where anybody may be responsible, sure
enough, but even if this guy creates the situation, it's just stupid and not responding.
Well, that again, Your Honor, I tend to think that child is looking at that person as that child's father. The child has emotional ties to that individual, has financial ties to that individual. The child has a whole lot of rights.
How old is this child?
4 years old. The child has a whole lot more rights. Has rights to inherit, right to pursue wrongful death actions, rights to Social Security if something were to happen to that individual. I think all those, in dealing with the legal establishment of the parents...
You don't really think a four-year-old's thinking about rights to inherit, do you?
No, and I think that right is there, Your Honor. I mean, and nobody can take that away from the child until the court issues an order.
But why? We have a legal issue here about how does one, can one in Mr. Guthrie's position access the system after he's obviously been dilatory and negligent and so forth. All those issues that you're talking about, those would all be determined in a hearing, would they not? I mean, if it's under 60B4, that's what we would use. It's no longer equitable that the judgment should have prospective application. We don't see the word equitable very often in rules or statutes in our state. That indicates that there's going to be some balancing of whether it's equitable to continue to say that Mr. Guthrie is this child's father. We can't determine that here, it seems. All we're asking, all we're being asked to do is to give a process by which an error, maybe it's not an error, I think the Court of Appeals is dead wrong and not, and just saying, the trial court is saying, well, there's DNA evidence, so that's it. I mean,
right,
not giving you any hearing to,
right.
Yeah, that's not very much due process to you, certainly. But I guess I'm wondering why the agency, we talk about the father here, his rights and all this sort of thing, but it's really the child that we should be interested in, is it not? Is it the best interest of the child to continue to have a father that's not really his father? That may be a real detriment to him or her in the future. Sure. But we can't decide that here. That's a sort of process that occurs in a hearing, doesn't it? All he's asking is that that's an important case, I think, because it's a question whether we allow someone back in the system, if you will, on an issue such as this. Usually it's easy to say, well, you slept on your rights, and so, you know, you're out. But here we've got a child that's involved, and to say you're out when the child is going to be affected by that seems to me to be, we have to think about that, I think. We've used your time. Thank you, Mr. Speckman. Mr. Guthrie was not represented, did not file a brief, and so the case is submitted.